And next on the show, Jan Hocken is here to talk with Kelsey Skaggs, Executive Director of the Climate Defense Project, about justifying otherwise illegal efforts to block the construction of a fracked gas pipeline by claiming that their actions were necessary to avoid the greater harms of climate change and threats to public safety. Jan.
Welcome to KABU, Kelsey Skaggs.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you and other attorneys with the Climate Defense Project provided legal counsel for the West Roxbury protesters arrested for blockading construction of a fracked gas pipeline and scheduled to go to trial last week. The West Roxbury protesters were denied a jury trial, although the ruling by the judge last week seemed to be a partial victory. Kelsey, can you provide some background on the case and what the protesters attempted to achieve and why the request for a jury trial was so central to the legal strategy?
Yes, as you said, this case centers on community resistance to the West Roxbury Lateral Pipeline, which goes through a neighborhood of Boston. It's a deeply unpopular pipeline. All of the elected officials who represent West Roxbury, every level except for the governor of Massachusetts, opposed this pipeline. The Boston City Council unanimously voted against it. Residents and the city for years tried everything they could to stop it, including litigation. And when none of that worked, including civil disobedience. So over a year-long period, more than 1,000 people protested and almost 200 were arrested. They were arrested for acts of nonviolent civil disobedience that forced the pipeline company to stop or to delay construction of the project. They did this by entering the work site, some by obstructing the entrance to the site, some by laying their bodies in the trench where the pipe was being laid. And of those arrested, 13 were set to go to trial last week on charges of trespass and disturbing the peace. Our legal strategy, the Climate Defense Project lawyers and our partners at the local chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, intended to present what is called the climate necessity defense. Essentially, we argue that what the activists did was the lesser of two evils. They broke one law in order to avert far greater harm. And in criminal law, a defendant who admits to this and who meets the elements of the necessity defense can be found not guilty by reason of necessity. So in this case, 1 week before the trial date, the prosecutor's office decided to downgrade the charges from criminal to civil infractions, meaning that the defendants no longer had a right to a jury trial. It's like defending against a parking ticket. So it's a very different situation when you have a jury trial and you're attempting to put on a defense like this, because in that situation, you can call the defendants to talk at length about what they did and why it was justified. We would have called expert witnesses from a variety of fields, such as climate science and scholars of civil disobedience, to speak to each of the elements of the necessity defense. But in a case where it's a civil infraction, that's not permitted. Arahan did still have a hearing, so the judge permitted them to speak briefly about why they did this. Ultimately, and this is why it's at least a partial victory, she found them not responsible, the civil equivalent of not guilty, by reason of necessity. This is the first time that's happened.
Well, so in the context of civil disobedience and the calls for it increasingly through social movements, I'm thinking about the Poor People's Campaign underway this month, a calling for a moral awakening based on a broad, very progressive platform of social justice issues. And in this call for what that campaign describes as a moral revival in this country around civil disobedience and actions of civil disobedience. How do you see this strategy as part or different from a larger mass movement engaged in civil disobedience? Because there were hundreds of people involved, but as I understand it, these were activists who understood that they would be charged with serious crimes that would lead to indictment and prosecutor then decided to put them forward toward the aim of getting a jury trial to have a bigger public setting for an argument for resisting climate change.
Yeah, it's not just about a bigger public setting. The issues that are raised by climate civil disobedience, the issues that are raised when we argue the climate necessity defense, are issues that really should go to a jury. The necessity defense is essentially a moral argument, though it's also part of criminal law, because it takes the issue to the people represented by the jury and asks the jury to make assessments about individual responsibility, governmental obligation, and the future of society. And I think that it's important for judges and juries to be addressing these questions, especially now when the political branches of government cannot or will not treat climate change like the crisis that it is. So it's certainly an appropriate use of this defense. And I think it is related, as you say, to other increases in organizing and civil disobedience, particularly. The necessity defense has a long history. It's part of common law that came over from England and has been codified in the statutes of many states. Old examples include things like a ship captain who was prosecuted for throwing cargo overboard, who proved he had to do it in order to avoid sinking. And more relevantly to us, it also has been used by activists. In the U.S., it's been successfully used by people in a variety of protest contexts. For example, in a Massachusetts case, Amy Carter, President Carter's daughter, successfully used the defense after being arrested for disrupting CIA recruitment in the 1980s. So there's definitely precedent for it. We have only started trying to make this argument in the climate context really within the past decade or past few years as it's gained popularity with climate activists.
And we've covered on the Old Mole Variety Hour program the valve turners and their cases along the border with Canada, and several of the valve turners have roots in Oregon, and they also have used the necessity defense. Well, one dilemma and controversy with the necessity defense is how costly it is and the high bar that has to be met to successfully mount a necessity defense and to carry it through the various machinations of the law. It sounds like in Massachusetts, the opposition to this pipeline was both of benefit to you, well, benefit on several fronts, both how much public opposition there was to it, and that opposition did not lead to a defeat for the oil company, that they were still able to prevail in building this pipeline. And so you were able to say that the normal democratic processes failed to stop them. Is that correct?
Yes. In terms of the effort needed to put on a case like this, look, every activist and group has to decide if it's worthwhile for them. I think many have decided that it's a worthwhile way to amplify the effectiveness of an action, to bring their story to more people, and to give judges and juries the opportunity to take these arguments seriously and really think about what we need to do about climate change. In terms of the lawful means of stopping this and other projects,
because that's part of one criterion, just so people understand,
right.
The criteria that have to be met for mounting a successful necessity defense.
Yes, really quickly, the elements vary state by state, but in general, you have to show that the defendant faced an imminent danger, i.e. climate change, that they reasonably expected that their action would prevent the danger, and that they had no reasonable, lawful alternative. And so what you're getting at in this case is that all of the lawful alternatives essentially had been tried, which is not necessarily required. You don't have to have exhausted all of those means. You can just say, look, the government who makes these decisions is responsive to industry interests, not to the people, which is clearly true. And had we been able to put on our full defense, we would have called a political scientist from Princeton who would testify to precisely that, because he studied it. But in this situation, the legal means have all been tried, and they haven't been able to stop the pipeline. So that testimony, including we had City Councilor, Boston City Councilor Michelle Wu, who intended to testify to all of the things that her office and her council had done to try to stop this project.
Why were they unsuccessful at stopping it, given the level and intensity of community opposition to it?
There are, I mean, a lot of reasons why the fossil fuel industry wins fights like this. I think the biggest one has to do with who's controlling the politicians and the agency who makes the decision. So in this case, even though the mayor of Boston's office challenged the permitting process for this pipeline, it was essentially rubber stamped. So I think it's a very stark example of the influence of money over these regulatory agencies.
Even in a state where the state does not depend very heavily on those industries.
Absolutely. There's such powerful, such wealthy industry interests that that is the case.
Even in Massachusetts?
Yes.
Okay. So what about the role of activist support? You were talking about on the political side. How important is broader political support for mounting a necessity defense and for pursuing this strategy? Because often, of course, these handful of people who are charged in a criminal case are seen as quite heroic. It can be seen as too heroic almost for everyday people to be part of this kind of strategy. What was the situation there in Boston, West Roxbury, with the level of political support?
Well, as I said, in West Roxbury, the people who were arrested, who were going to trial, were 13 of 200 arrestees, and they were 200 of 1,000 people who were protesting. And that doesn't include, you know, all the people who did everything short of protest. And I think that that actually is somewhat typical, even in cases like you mentioned, the valve turners. Behind the people who risk arrest and decide to go to trial, there is generally a very deep community of not just political support, but interpersonal support. These are groups of people, campaigns, and communities who are coming together and organizing. And I think that any of the arrestees, the clients that I work with, would tell you how absolutely critical it is that they're part of a strong group, that they have people supporting them through the arrest process, trial support. People traveling to court cases all over the country is hugely important, as, of course, is support if people do end up facing any sort of prison time or other sentence.
So in closing, how can listeners support the ongoing work of the West Roxbury protesters and perhaps learn more about the Climate Defense Project as well?
Yeah, you can visit climatedefenseproject.org is our website. We have resources there and links to a lot of our work, including this case. We also have a Facebook page under Climate Defense Project.
So this will be an ongoing struggle, and we have a strong base of that kind of work here in the Pacific Northwest. So that's another kind of political pipeline around the country, a progressive pipeline of shared work. Well, keep up the good work yourself. This is Jan Hawken speaking today with Kelsey Skaggs, Executive Director of the Climate Defense Project, giving us a report on the West Roxbury protesters. Thanks so much.
Thank you.